podcast. KellerKellerOfficial.com.
You need the Kellervision app. 24/7 mini documentaries, podcasts, live shows, DJ live streams, top fives, subscription packages, plus products for all your podcasts and street culture sports. Download it from the App Store for free today.
Instagram UK Frontline.
Beatbox created.
Killer Keller.
And we're here to talk about world music and street culture.
Killer Keller Podcast.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's Killer Keller Podcast, coming to you live and direct in London. Central London, as central as you need to be. Big shout out to graffitikings.co.uk. If you haven't checked out the Kellervision app, get involved. Free download for all your street culture, sports and needs. Yeah, we've got a special guest, Transatlantic, getting it across over there. Beyond legacy holder, the creator of graffiti, the man himself, Philadelphia's cornbread inside the place. How are we, sir?
Hello, London. Hello, the UK. It's good to be here.
You are chilling. You're chilling good.
Yeah, that's all I can do, chill, man. You know, I'm up in age now. There's not a lot to play me anymore. I sit back.
Oh, stop it.
I try to make things happen. And no, I got to stay busy. My mind got to stay busy. There's no place for idle time. Adulation is irritation.
How old are you? If you don't mind me asking.
I just turned 67.
Happy birthday.
Yeah. I turned 67 in November.
It always humbles me so much when, you know, people like yourself are here very much in the scene, active, doing their part, and yet humble themselves and the originators, the creators of the culture. It just blows my mind and baffles me at the same time.
Yeah. It's like a purity, you know, like those cats I came through the ranks with. Like, we relate on a certain level that we can identify with. And we know what we did. We know what we started. We know what happened. Mm. You know, sad to say that we didn't get our proper respect, our proper notoriety, as to say. But a lot of this took place, born and bred in Philadelphia. I'm not taking credit from anyone else, but hip hop has a vision, or this is a place where I've started at. There's a place, there's a time, there's a origin.
Yeah.
And there's a version, Philadelphia version of hip hop. That was before New York.
We're going to get into this, and this is going to be one of the most key podcasts I think I could possibly have. We're going to go in depth and thorough, and because there's a lot of cross referencing and things, and like you say, there's a lot of people that have been left out of the tapestry that predates New York, predates Bronx, predates hip-hop.
Right.
And,
right,
you know, gangster rap comes from Philadelphia, Schoolie D.
I can bust a rap to you, but I'm not. But I can bust it. That's what Philadelphia was doing. We was busting rap. The same thing they were doing in New York took place in Philly. And when that movement migrated, got to New York put a title on it and called it hip-hop. But it's something, man. I mean, we had a movement of 150,000 teenagers who involved themselves in a social uprise, you know? And our convention day annually was in Atlanta City before the casinos was built. You can imagine 150,000 teenagers occupying all the hotels in Atlanta City. That's what we did. We took over.
Wow.
That was the first wave of the hip-hop revolution.
What date was that?
That was in the 60s.
Man.
That was in the 60s, man.
How old were you at that point, bro?
I had just came home from reform school. Wow. I came home. I got the name in reform school. I got notoriety in reform school because I started writing my name all over the halls of YGC, Youth Development Center. I was sitting there. I was sentenced there for an indefinite term.
And wow.
I was going. We was going to our child hall to, you know, eat our breakfast, lunch, and that's where we had at the cafeteria. And a lot of times when we got to the cafeteria, C unit was outside the unit I was on. Our bread was kind of hard. It was stale sometimes.
Right.
And I went to the back of the kitchen and I asked to speak to the head chef. And I knocked on the guy's door. He said, "Open the door, come in there. I'm a busy person. What do you want?" I said, "I'd like to talk to you about, you know, you put some cornbread on the menu, Mr. Swanson." He said, "I'm a busy person. I don't have no time. But who give you permission to come into my kitchen?" I said, "Nobody." He said, "Man, get the F out of my kitchen. Take a walk, man. I ain't got time for this." But yes, take a walk. So I left. And I see why I was agitating him. So I had to get on his nerves. I came back a couple of days later. I said, "Mr. Swanson, let's talk about some cornbread." And he like kind of, you know, keeps coming at me, "Man, you don't get the F out of here." You know, and I started toying with him. Every time I went back to him, he just ripped me up, man, and took me out of anybody was sitting there and threw me on the floor and got real loud at me. "Mr. Love, this is my counselor. Keep this cornbread out of my kitchen and put it on the floor." I started laughing at me, teasing me, cornbread. Wasn't no thing to me. You know, in all the places, the jail was infested with gang members. And I don't know anybody who had a cooler name than a gang member.
Yeah.
And cornbread fit right on in. So I started writing cornbread all over the place, in the cafeteria, in the church, in the visiting room, in the administration, in the nurse's office. I mean, all over the place. So I started getting the attention of the administration and started pushing me like, why are you writing your name all over the place like this, man?
Yeah.
And I'm like, you know, you don't bother the gangs when the gangs do it. Why are you fucking with me?
Mm-hmm.
They said, "Oh, you're going to be smart ass. Well, how about we make you clean it off? We'll put your ass in the home." And I got real loud. I got real, "Well, put me in the fucking hole. I'm not watching all shit." And the gang members started plumbing. Okay, Brad. I went straight to the home because I was fine. I just couldn't do what they told me to do. So I went to the home. I came out the home. And I started banging cornbread again out. I got the attention there. So they coming to me, "Yo, what's up with you, man? You keep like this cornbread stuff for the place." So somebody said, "Maybe you need to go see a psychiatrist." I go see the psychiatrist. He says, "Why are you writing cornbread all over the place, man? What's wrong with you?" I said, "You ain't seen shit yet. I'm gonna set the world on fire. You ain't seen shit." And I came over in 1967. I start walking bus routes. Every time my bus stop, they say my name, cornbread. I wrote cornbread everywhere, every day. That's what I did. A lot of guys was at the gang war, hurting each other, shooting each other, stabbing each other. Some guys was into sports. Some guys in entertainment.
Yeah.
This was a new thing. This is a new mind. Under the attention I got at YDC, I can get the same thing in the street. We didn't use the word graffiti. We didn't use the word hip-hop. You know what?
Go
ahead. Why do you think we didn't use the word graffiti and hip-hop?
They weren't there.
There you go. There was none.
How would you have defined it back then? If you were to, because like you say, I get the entertainment aspect. That totally rings true because you're providing, it's an artistic platform. But what would you have described it if it wasn't graffiti or writing? What would you have called it?
Well, I don't know. If I hadn't done it, somebody else would have done it. It's just that I knew what I had to my advantage. I had a way of communicating. And I knew that the more I wrote, the more they would talk about me. And eventually, I would reach the media. That was my objective. And I reached the media, but it wasn't by way what I thought it would be.
Did you think it would be
by some glorious feat that I had done? But I was going to work one day, and I'm picking up the newspapers. I always read the newspapers while I ride the bus, and I was going to work, and on the front page it read, "Cornbread is shot to death." Said it was, that's what it said on the front page. "Cornbread is shot to death."
Wow.
Story on page 3. So I turn to page 3. And this is what it read. The fantastic career of Philadelphia best-known graffiti artist came to a violent and sunny outside a hotel and bar. Here I am on the bus reading about my own death.
Mad.
I'm like, what? I pull the cord. I get off the bus. I call my job. I call out that day. I call the newspapers. You better get your story right. Guy's like, hello? I said, you better anchor that article about Cornbread and shot to death. Well, Cornbread is not dead. I'm Cornbread and I'm alive. Wow. Let Cornbread rest in peace, man. Cornbread is gone. Let him go, man. Let him rest in peace. We don't need no imposters. He hung up on me. I called them back. I said, you better get your story right. I'll tear this town up. Get your story right. Oh, you again. Let Cornbread rest in peace. He hung up. And I knew that if I didn't do something in the next 7 days, take my name out of the death of the guy got killed, that my name would...
It would go out of history. It would go out of circulation.
It would have never made history. I'm just getting started.
Yeah.
I'm just getting started.
They're trying to get rid of you. They're trying to delete you before you even began.
No, such is not the case.
Yeah.
The guy got killed. His name was Cornelius.
Oh, I see.
And he's standing in the street, somebody blew his brains out. And people walking by, Corn is shot. Corn is dead. Somebody killed Corn.
Wow.
The media automatically assumed that the Corn short for Cornelius was the Corn short for Cornbread. And erroneously announced my demise.
Foolish.
I'm on a bus reading about my own death. That became a prescription for disaster. Mad. I knew I had to do something amazingly bizarre to snatch the media attention so they could repeat their story and let them know that I still exist. I had pondered countless possibilities, man. I didn't know what to do. And I started writing, Cornbread is not dead, but that didn't have no impact on the general public because they just read an article from page, Cornbread shot to death.
It was a big outlet. That was a big outlet that just right. done in, yeah.
Right. So I knew I can't let my reputation go to Cornelius' grave. And I knew I had to do something media. I mean, something real bizarre to snatch the media attention so they could repeat this story and bring me back to life. And the only thing I could think of, man, the only thing I could think of that the media gonna print about was going to the zoo. Why? Because the zoo is a tourist attraction. Let something happen in the zoo. Everybody could know.
Genius.
I go to the zoo and I'm walking around thinking, where am I going to start at? And I seen all these people sitting around in this pit. It was, you know, hey, in the natural crowd, I go and see what they're looking at. And there's a zookeeper showering down the elephant. You know, so he taking pictures with the people, man, and he grab hold of the elephant trunk. And he making contact with the elephant torso. He's pulling on the elephant ears. To me, the first thing that came to me was this elephant must have came from the circus.
Oh, and shit.
So I said, I'm like, well, if he can touch that elephant like that, so the fuck can I? I watched the elephant for 3 days, man. And I knew I was going to bomb the whole zoo out, right? I was going to bomb the whole zoo out. But I don't need to do the whole zoo. I got up Sunday morning, early in the morning, anticipating. Went to the back of the zoo, came over the fence, came down the clothes where he was at, happened to the pit, and I walked up to him. I took the spray paint off and started clacking up. Clack, clack, clack. Get a ball rapid.
What did the elephant do?
He turned around and looked at me. He heard the clack, and he turned around and looked at me.
Oh, shit.
And he didn't pay me no attention. I walked up to my old Cornbread lives.
Oh,
I ran around to the other side of old Cornbread lives. That was a piece of cake, man. I was anticipating all this. Didn't know what to expect. I'm like, this one shit, right?
So I comes out the, hard.
Right, wasn't it? No. So I hops out the pit.
Yeah.
Guess what? The whole zoo is at my disposal. I have my way. I just like I literally just raped the zoo. I wrote my name and everything, man.
You just hit the whole zoo up. The whole zoo got hit.
Somebody else was in that zoo, man, to see that I was doing. They called the police.
Oh,
yeah, if I had went on that elevator, came out that zoo, I mean, my ex, I've been long gone, but I stayed around, man, and left my mark. And by the time I got to the exit, the police were just pulling him up.
Wow.
We threw the guns. I put my hands up in the air. I said, go away, put your hands behind your back. Took me in custody, man, locked me up. So I was up all night anticipating going to the zoo when I my thing. I got locked up in the process. So I'm trying to get me some rest. I'm sleeping down on the juvenile bench.
Yeah.
Man, holding himself. Every 5 minutes. Yo, which one of y'all was calling Bread? I said, right here. Yo, kid, give me an autograph. Every 5-10 minutes, man.
That's what?
You know, like the whole block is, yo, what's up, Cornbread? What's up, man? Who the fuck is you, man?
And you got, is it because they all thought you'd gone?
I went to the hearing for that, man. And the judge got my autograph, man. I said, this is on some hot shit, man.
That's the coldest story I've fucking ever heard.
So Georgie Woods, a Philadelphia a DJ, announced on the radio that the Jackson 5 was coming to Philly to do a show at the Uptown Theater.
Right.
And, Jackson 5 was one of the hottest groups in America. And you can do that, right? Okay. Since 9/11, everything has changed.
Yeah.
But back then, you know, you could come out to the tour, man, and anybody, there's like a publicity stunt, the Jackson 5. So I go down there the day that the plane arrived, and about maybe 70 people down there, man. You know, it comes in, it idles about 10 minutes. The metal door lets down the stairwell. Michael comes to the top of the stairwell. They were kissed. Everybody went ballistic, screaming and hollering, whooping and screaming.
Wow.
Well, Michael, Tito, Jackie, Marlo, Jermaine came on the steps. It was total chaos. I didn't come in to see the Michael Jackson vibe. I didn't come in to see none of them. When they walked through the crowd, everybody hooped and hollered trying to get to him. I said, up the steps. Write my name on the jet.
You didn't.
Did I? They talked about me like they talked about Jesus. I'm trying to tell you something. That would make me, I knew that. I remember when that jet and the elephant, that would make me the elite graffiti artist of the world.
Of the world.
I'm trying to tell you. All I wanted to do was read about myself. And I would do anything by any means necessary to read about myself in the newspapers. And that's what I did. That's what I did. I came up with a scheme. I had the police come to the practice one time.
Yeah.
And I had my buddy, I had my blank gun. And I said, when these cops come, why don't you start shooting at them?
What?
He said, why? I said, why should I do that? You got blank guns, man. Nobody's going to get hurt. When they come in the building, they'll find out when the shots has come. They're going to need their vehicles unattended.
Yeah.
I'm going to write my name on the vehicles, man. Go ahead, Bria, do that. So I called the cops. Only two cop cars showed up. I said, that's not enough, man. That's not enough cop cars. So I took my hat off. You know, this sooner. When I take my hat off, they start cutting loose. Two cop cars shows up. I take my hat off. He start cutting loose. They didn't know where the shots were coming from. They start backing up. He reloaded and start shooting at him again. They called for backup. And backup came. And he started shooting. I said, now I'm scrapping them. When they start coming in the building, go downstairs to your apartment and chill. We was in a vacant apartment. And they stuck him in the building. He went downstairs and he chilled.
Yeah.
He goes back downstairs and seen all the vehicles, police, Cornbread.
Oh my God.
They riding around. There's too many vehicles that I rode on. They couldn't take off the street. But they were not publicizing.
Because they clocked it from the jump what your intentions were. Were, and slowly it came to light that you were being publicized each time. So what they kind of ruled, they just stopped publicizing that you were doing right. It, even though right. It was right.
Right.
How much? Give me more account, because this is some documentation of an heart, like this stuff that did not get publicized once the elephant had happened and the Jackson 5, all of that. What? Give me more that has not been documented.
I want you to name one hip hop artist that was before me.
Before you?
Yes.
Wow. I couldn't. Tell me.
There was none. I started this shit.
He started this shit, people. He started this shit. You know, like Banksy with the elephant at his, at his gallery exhibition. This, you were there before that. You did the elephant.
What do you think he got? The Banksy has my elephant and Basquiat has my crown.
Right.
Are you aware of that? I don't mind.
Yeah, of course.
I mean, God, that's my brother. Both of them are my brothers.
Yeah. I just can't believe it.
You know how I got the crown?
Tell me.
I came home in 67. I just started bombing everywhere, man. And I was a new phenomenon. And I would come to your neighborhood and bomb everywhere. And people just like couldn't understand who was Cornbread. Yeah. And I became a phantom.
Phantom, yeah. Yes,
I was a phantom in the night. I'd be when you go to sleep and I'm all through your neighborhood. And they begin to talk about me. And then my name appeared dead. I came back from the dead. Oh, it really blew up. So, I start walking bus routes. Mm. And I would go out, I just write my name. Like, I would go all of the neighborhoods. And the gangs I was in, the reform school, they were my friends. Mm. And we were young criminals, but they were into hurting each other, shooting and stabbing, disrespect. I wasn't into that.
No, I was like,
I liked the attention that I got from the administration, talking to the social workers and the teachers and the psychiatrists. We going back and forth. And I tell them, wait till I get out of here. You're going to hear about me. I'm going to set this shit off. Mm. And I think that by way of Cornelius' death was the platform that started all of this. Had he not died, I believe that would eventually grow out of this. Mm. Right. So when I came home, I start writing the name Cornbread everywhere and anywhere. This is what I did as a pastime. And I made people talk about me. I made people pay attention to me. I'm some newer, brand new phenomenon. There's no other artist who's going around writing his name anywhere on the level that I was doing it. Gang members did it. The gang members wrote their name on walls to identify their turf.
That's right.
I wrote my name on walls because Phil Luff was my canvas. And everybody knew about me. I'm coming in one night and I see a bunch of guys on the corner, you know, having fun, busting with each other, talking and drinking and smoking and you know. And I stand there and I listen to them talk. I got my little laugh on. I said, let these guys know who I am. So I walk across the street, put up my kids' paper, I wrote Cornbread. And they say, whoa, that's you. They came up to where I was and said, oh my God, who are you? Where you come from? Where you live at? I said, this is my neighborhood, man. Y'all knew Jackson, my neighborhood. I just come home. How long you been? I said, I've been away for a couple of years, man. You know? So Teddy said, well, man, can I write my name with your spray paint? I said, you can write his name. He wrote Teddy, and he wrote these emblems, Delta Phi Soul. I said, what's that? He said, that's the street club that we belong to, and I want you to join us. Mm. I said, okay. He said, come down Pee-wee's tomorrow, about 6:30, 7 o'clock. That's where we're going to be. So I meet Pee-wee's. I mean, this guy's like, this is Cornbread. No, that's type of thing. So Teddy wanted to be my man. He said, man, I want to hang out with you, man. He said, when you go out and write your name, I might want to go out and write my name with you. He said, come on. I said, come on. So we start going out. And he threw him catch the bus. I said, no, we walk everywhere. And I watched him, all the gang members whose neighborhoods that I knew or where the gang members they was from. I was in jail with these guys. And they told me, you better come down that way and drink wine with us. You better come down drinking on you. And I made it my business to go to every gang member I knew and drink wine with these guys. And I would take Titty with me.
So you were affiliated with all those loosely because of your notoriety. It gave you the key to the city.
Exactly. I had a free pass. I wrote letters for these guys. I mean, we hung out in reform school together. I mean, I busted up with them. You know, we was down below. And so when I came home, I hooked up with Delta Phi Soul. And Titty was like the president. And Titty wanted to hang out with me. So I had to take him on route with me. And I used to write Cornbread, he used to write Titty. But Tom had to write my name with real big nine letters. T-I-T-Y, screen of letters. He would write titty 4 or 5 times real fast. And I'd take my rhyme, make corner real big and legible and neat. Mm. And he'd write titty all around corner. I didn't mind that. But every time I told him, he would write corner, he would write titty 5, 6 times. I didn't know what he was getting at. And after so many times, he wrote titty, king of the walls. I took that personal. I said, Teddy, what are you writing? I said, well, you can't write this. You know, I put that letter. I let you ride with me. Just because you write your name 4 or 5 times to my 1 or 2 times to make you the king. Uh-huh. You can't write king of the walls, Teddy. You know, I'm going to write king of the walls. He said, no problem. So I wrote cornbread, king of the walls, and all kings wear crowns. And I put a crown on my name.
There it is.
And that's the crown that basketball took. And I'm on an elephant. That's the elephant that Bansky took. And it's all good money.
That's crazy.
It's all good money.
Do you, I mean, look, graffiti is infectious.
It is. I mean, some people, man, like, I said before, it's in your blood. You know?
It's in your blood, yeah.
It's in your blood, man. It's in your DNA. And don't let your father be one. And you be one. Man, which one? All you can be is an artist. Mm. And that's what it's going to evolve you to be, whether you like it or not. Because that's the world. Mm-hmm. That'd be a toilet. That's what we revolve in the art world, not the street world.
Mm. It's I mean, where to begin? It's evolved. And do you often feel like, because, you know, you talk about titty and obviously yourself, these are like early beginnings of, you know, even having the crown on the top of a tag. That, to me, it's like hearing Hendrix pull off a riff. It's so installed in the mind of everybody, you know. But this it all starts from somewhere. It must actually, when you see the evolution of graph, it must stir up some cause for you to want to bring up the fact that, yeah, there was me, there was titty, there was these. Does it not, does the ego not want you to kind of announce, no, wait a minute, it started here, it started this was what happened, and these were the people? Does it make you feel that way?
Right. Well, you know, I want to put it to you like, I want to get gratitude to New York for their contribution to this culture, because it was, the birth of it was conceived here in Philadelphia. But when we start writing, I start writing cornbread, and teenagers didn't catch on to what I was doing until I started appearing in the newspapers. Right. When they start reading articles about me, all of them wanted to receive that same notoriety that I received. I've in the newspapers, splash, headlines, magazine covers, editorials, comic scripts. I mean, they talked about, I was a new phenomenon. It was pre-hip-hop.
Yeah.
And the movement that we're about, that was the first wave of the hip-hop revolution, because when we consume the hotels in Atlantic City, in every hotel there's a grand ballroom. It was nothing but battles, man. And all the grand ballrooms, they were nothing but battles. All the hotels was consumed with 150,000 teenagers, which was the first wave of the hip-hop revolution.
Explain the battles. We were MCs, dancing. Breaking? You
know, breaking, yes. Yes, wow. Yes, yes, yes.
Rapping. That's crazy.
I can rap. I can bust a rap to you right now and say that's crazy. We was doing that. But see, the graffiti was overlooked because when that became popular, I overlooked everything else. The artist never got the recognition that I got, because the media had papers to sell and they could sell papers off of me. The erotic things that I was doing. They talked about me like they talked about Jesus. And the artist didn't get the play that I got. And a lot of graffiti artists wanted to receive the same notoriety, and they started coming out the cracks of the walls. Philadelphia became the graffiti capital of the world. this graffiti thing was so bad, it went on unchecked for 17 years. And it wasn't until the black mayor, Wilson Good, ran in the office and looked so bad, he said his top priority was to rid the city graffiti that turned away city business. So I went to him with my scrapbook in hand and I said, Your Honor, I'd be a great asset to your program if you gave me a job. Mm-hmm. His program was the Philadelphia Anti-Graffiti Network. We had to clean the whole city up. Everybody was pointing fingers at me because Cornbury started it. So I go to the mayor. He gives me a job. I'll be glad to hire you. I want you down here Tuesday at 10 o'clock in the morning at a press conference. I'll be back in the newspaper. I work with some good kids was taking time off of school and come down to the annex where our officers have to see what I look like and sign autographs to hang out with me. And he said, Darryl, the kids can't come here, man, in the office during school hours. You got to stop it. Man, the kids is coming to Cornbury. He said, sign this. You talking about some art. You talking some art. I would sign it. They would go sell. Of course, my sister was on there and give me half the money. I would get more money from the kids than I was getting from administration paycheck.
That blows my mind.
Yeah, man. You talking about, man, when the president of the Ready Terminal Market came to me with a concept. They would put my face on a box of cornbread mix with the authentic ingredients. The Amish was going to, we went to the farm up in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. We got shears of a long girdle corn and an old-fashioned fluff. What is it? The brown flour?
Wheat.
Wheat flour, yes. Oh my God. We had a white girl from South Africa named Felicity. She was here in the Gourmet Kitchen and she used to do the baking at night, man. And we used to sell that. We used to sell that that product in the Veteran Tour Market on the early Saturday mornings, man.
Hold on, stop a minute. This is too much for me. So you created a cornbread product that you sold.
Yes.
Because of your notoriety. With cornbread.
Yes, but it goes on, man. I got caught up in the throes of drug addiction, man. Amen. And I was like, you know, it was so much, like, same thing, Keith Harrington, same thing, Prosper. We all went through the same thing. They wasn't as fortunate as I was.
What, explain what do you mean?
I got caught up in that drug addiction, man. Like, you know, I had a stall at the Veteran Terminal Market and everything the Felicity cooked, we sold.
I was
really like, we came up, man. Those black and split movies, like we portrayed what we seen on television or on a movie, you know what I'm saying? And we played the junkie part and, you know, just playing around, just acting, and Thomas was being cool, acting out, going buying the drugs and playing, you know what I'm saying? And, you know, at that time, there was a heroin academic in America.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm a fiend. I'm an ex-fiend. Yeah. You know, and that day, nothing. I would have to be where the action was at. And right about that time when things was beginning to be possible, I got caught up in the substance abuse. And I sometimes we better return the market, selling the goods, man. And that heroin, man, would be happy in that. Man, I couldn't even help. I'd be nodding, slapping from my mouth, man. And the guy with the president was like, Darryl, what is wrong with you, man?
And they just didn't know.
And I just couldn't help myself, you know what I'm saying? And they was giving me the money. Then we made that Saturday. It's just yours. We would put up in the mass production.
Yeah.
And man, I just couldn't, I understand. And, you know, that plague followed me for a long time.
How many years did it consume you?
Well, I left it alone and I got straight for a long while.
Okay.
And then I went to New York, I went to school and I came back home. I still got a job with Wilson Good. And Wilson Good appointed Tim Spencer, the director of the Philadelphia Anti-Graffiti Network. Okay. He was one telling me he can't have the kids coming down during school hours. He can't be signing the kids' work, because that's their work. And he said he might have been a director of the show, but I was a star. He might have been director of the program, but I was a star of the show.
Yeah.
When the media would come, where's cornbread? And kids would come from school. I would sit there, man, like, you know. And he, you know, Tim didn't like that. He didn't like my old, he was living in my shadow. He was a director. And he took it personal. We had a personality clash.
Okay.
We didn't work out.
So what date was this? When did this take place? What decade?
Wilson Good. I think Wilson Good came in almost 84. This is like 86.
So this was peak New York. No, maybe just after the peak of New York graffiti was, so everything was like battered.
Yeah, I mean, Philadelphia with the, but Wilson Good came in 4. We cleaned it up in 84. But okay. I mean, like, it was, you couldn't come and do the bit. That's how bad Philadelphia looked. Hmm. And they pointed for them. You started it. So I say, we even started, in your neighborhood. And I started advertising whole North Philly. And I was just beginning to establish a political foundation for myself. I became members of the Navy Advisory Councils and tried to introduce the positive things of myself in the community. And Tim saying that, and, you know, he, every time when we have a board meets a meeting, I said, he would let me become verbally abusive in front of me, man, to me.
What,
in front
of people, man.
You know, and it's like,
damn, what fucking
shit. I got to a point where I started putting him in his place, you know, in front of other people, you know. And so it was in his office once. He said, why don't you just pack your stuff and leave, man? I said, Tim, you wouldn't be sitting in that chair if it wasn't for me. You didn't hire me. Wilson hired me, and you can't fire me. So why don't you just sit in your chair and mind your business and leave me alone. Just try to get along, man, because I can only take but so much.
Yeah.
So I went back to my desk and sat down. 10 minutes later, two uniformed cops walked to Mexico, cornbread. Come on, man. Come on. I looked at Tim. Man, he's the first person I put my break. I wanted to break his face, man.
Fuck yeah.
And I went back to Wilson Good. And Wilson Good would not override his decision.
No.
I was back in the street, man. So I started selling drugs. Before you knew it, I was back with it again. And this
That's
time,
fucked.
Man,
That's know, fucked.
I stayed away for a minute, right? And my barber, who's a graffiti artist, he was cutting my hair. He's always telling me, come on, Brady, you gotta come back, man. You gotta come back. I said, come on here, that shit, man. This guy, he said, man, we put the show together, man. We're gonna showcase your name. We're gonna come get you a limousine. We're gonna give you some money, man. And these people don't mean that we know you, but we're gonna come get you, man. All we want you to do is be available. Mm. I said, come get me. So I cleans up. I wrestles up. I cleans up. I goes down with these guys, man, and we pulled up, man. I must be over, man. But the car you have is like with a pain in the car, get the bounce in it, wild and the music flaring, and they went with stupid, right? It was crazy cars.
Yeah.
And we pulled up, man, and they mobbed me like I was Elvis or somebody. Man. I'm like, and I'm still drunk crazed. I'm like, what? I don't believe this. What was it? Yeah, I tried to tell you, Brent. And I used to hear tell him, Basquiat, Keith Harrington, you know, and I thought, you know, I'm looking up to them, and here they are, but a little older than my children, looking up to me.
Crazy.
You know.
Mind-blowing.
Right. All the three of us was in the same old substance abuse, you know.
At that point, listen, this is going to be a crass question, but did you chop it up with them on that level at this event?
Did I what?
Did you chop it up with them on that level at this event? Did you guys get on it?
Who?
Together? You, Chris Herring, Keith Herring.
No.
I had to ask.
When I came out, they were gone. When I came up, you know, from the subculture.
Yeah.
To the art world, they were gone.
Okay.
Right. But that was before them, and they honored me. I didn't know how, my head was so far down in the ground, man.
Yeah, I'm looking
up to them, and they just looked over my children, and they always looked up to me, you know. And basketball, he can have the crown, and basically he can have the elephant. That's all good money, man.
Yeah. Wow. Any other names from back in Philadelphia times that you want to give a shout out that perhaps do not get the acclaim that they deserve? You know, it's a Titty, it was gangs Doctor, themselves.
Dr. Cool, number one.
Uh-huh.
T-Bob, Neptune, Calypso Kid, Cool Earl. My man Titty, man. Titty was too. I always said it. Titty and Bobby Cool and Chewy, you know. We were the main ones.
Mm.
Cool Calypso Kid, Bad News Jimmy, you know, Cold Duck, you know.
Mm.
I think I ran for 2 years by myself, for 2 years from 67 to 69. The city belonged to me.
Seeing their names as you gradually got more notorious?
About 69, when I started penning the newspapers, they started about 69. That's when it started coming out. I started printing newspapers, and people started talking about me a lot.
Mm.
And a lot of kids wasn't really into gang war. You know, a lot of kids wasn't into sports.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of kids just hanging around, had a lot of idle time to do nothing.
Idle time, yeah.
Right, and graffiti is not simple behavior, man. It's not simple behavior. And it's a form of expression. And if you got any God-gifted talent, why not exhibit it?
You know, for sure.
Right.
For sure.
And I had a scheme, I know how I was treated when I was at YDC. I got all these accolades and special tips and, you know, all the well wishing me that to do well, to where you can take this to another and do well for yourself. I like that, you know?
Yeah.
And I knew that I could get the same thing I got if I came through the street. There was no computers.
Nah, that's what I'm saying.
I was a computer.
This was text message before.
Yes.
Yes. And it still holds true now because, you know, this is like the real virus, you know, never mind what they, never mind computers, dude.
And our neighborhood, white folks were still living in our neighborhood.
Yeah.
This was like the early 60s, man.
Yeah.
Early 60s. They put me away in 65. I came home in 67, you know. And they were, you better be right on the walls. I just did the jail up. I'm going to make the city my campus. Yeah. And that was the beginning, man. That was the beginning.
But how did New York discover this? Like, was this through the media that it came through the pipelines to the Bronx?
It was right as that migrated from Philly, did went to New York. Top Cat left Philly, went to New York. It don't take much. I mean, it's just next door. You know, about New York is the media capital of the world.
That's right.
And anything happens in New York is magnified.
Yeah.
We didn't have that benefit in Philly. When we started, people they was getting their homes written on, churches, buildings, people got their cars written on. I mean, it became a contagious disease and it spread like a wildfire.
You guys had no mercy, man. You're hitting churches and cars.
Yeah, man. It was like, and it was ugly. And when nobody going to invest no money in nothing like that or promote nothing like that, you know? We went to the Graffiti Alternative Workshop headed by Mina Siegel, who was students at the University of Pennsylvania. And her and some students put together an open workshop with their own money and more supplies with hopes of coming here and this person showing them something, what's happened to our culture, man. And that was a beautiful thing, of course. You know, she was a plus. And Frank Rizzo, the last day that she went to the man, asked him for funding. And he said, these the same kids, you know, fuck that town. You want me to fund these guys? Hell no, I'm not going to fund them. And each generation passed on. Graffiti went on unchecked. 17 years. Wow. 17 years. I just got worse and worse and worse. So I got the job with Wilson Good. That was a plus, but I ran a thing with Tim.
Yeah.
it was crazy. It goes on, man. It goes on.
How do you feel? How do you feel about this? Because, and this is just a bit of a revelation that kind of kicks in now when I hear you conversating, and you know, and people who invested money back at that in their days.
Oh, that was my point. I'm sorry. That was my point.
Yeah. Go on.
Nobody invested in us.
They invested in the scene, but not you.
And then they didn't invest in us at all.
But they invested in the scene, but they didn't invest in you, right?
Listen to me. In Philadelphia, nobody invested in nothing when it came to us. Because it wasn't right.
That's fucked.
But when they migrated to New York, they had investors that invested in the artists, that invested in the dancer, that invested in the rapper, and brought it to the forefront. When everything happened, same thing here in Philly.
Before
we got to New York, but there was no investment for us.
Does that hold a grudge in your mind?
What bothers me is New York wants to think that they gave birth to this culture, and they didn't.
Yeah, I feel.
I do know that. Rather, what happened at that time, history speaks for itself. There's a Herwood academic that took place in New York, and hundreds of thousands of people controlled the streets because they were addicts.
Yeah,
had a real drug problem in New York, man. A real bad drug problem.
For real.
That's on the same time. When 150,000 teenagers had a social uprising going. That was the first wave of the hip-hop revolution. Mm. And by the time that movement migrated to New York, the Bronx put a title on it and called it hip-hop. It was exactly the same thing we did in Philly. They don't like when I speak because history speaks for itself.
Yeah, I feel you. I feel you, and you're not... This isn't the first example of how the history books like to be rewritten to fit the narrative of people that are on top.
Well, I'll tell you this much. I ain't gonna say that. God, I gotta watch what I say.
Really?
I really do. What you say can come back and bite you in the butt.
Yeah, I feel you.
But I try to let history speak for me.
Because the cream, the cornbread, rises to the top.
Right. History speaks for me. History speaks for me.
Yeah. And you know what? Here's the truth about purity. Is there's always somebody, like myself, I 100% hold my hand up to it, likes the truth to come out. Likes cultural reference points to be facts, and this is one of those facts. This is one of those hard. Some people don't want to hear it. Some people, you know, they like the narrative to be of their, you know, of their gain, but it ain't the truth.
Well, a lot of people know the truth. A lot of people know the truth, especially when I come over there. Mm. You know, there was a Don Wiesman, a documentary film about graffiti. Mm. A lot of scholar filmmakers told the truth. Mm. New York just didn't have the history. And Philly did. But New York is the media capital of the world. And anything they do is magnified. You know, they need the world to believe that this took place with them in the beginning. It did not.
Yeah.
It took place with me in the beginning.
Yeah, and it just blows my mind. How do you feel about nowadays writers adopting a purist attitude to things that technically they would have received information from a commercial standpoint? Think about, do you know what I'm saying? It's like you were the original. You were the original grail that you then saw get to a commercial level. Then after that, writers suddenly get a purist attitude of, oh, that's da-da-da-da-da. But the truth is, they stand from a point of view that they received the information from a commercial place.
That's ironic because a lot of information they get awarded. Like, I read books about history and biography. Like, they made Star Wars. and had a screening of Star Wars in Philly at a library. And they were suggested by someone, you need to go see that. You need to go see that.
Yeah.
And I goes down there and I sit in like maybe 6, 7 rows up.
Yeah.
And we watched the film. And at halftime, the lights came on. It was Q's and A's, questions and answers.
Yeah.
So people asked some different questions. I raised my hand. And I stands up. I said, how is it you can make a film about graffiti and I am not included? Everybody turned around like, who the hell, who is this? Who was this talking? So the guy said, you are not included. Well, who might you be, sir? I said, my name is Cornbread. And they went, oh my God, everybody turned around. I got him talking. He put his two fingers to his head, and put his head down. And he knew what he learned afterwards. After that film was made, he had to confess. And I said, he said, come on down, Cornbread. I came down. He said, I want to apologize to you, man. He said, I want to apologize to you because I know now, but I didn't know then, that you should have been in this film, and this started the film off here. He didn't say he was sorry. He said, I want to apologize. And that was good enough. Right? And even with that being said, and, you know, like I'm saying, Star Wars is the New York thing.
Yeah, true.
Nobody invested in us.
And they still haven't. That's the problem.
Absolutely. You're right.
That's fucked because right. You guys have got, like, you were before that. There should be documentation.
Right.
Yeah, this is fucked.
We are the originators. Dick Spears and Dr. Faso. That was hip hop.
That's not good enough, man. That's not good enough. The Philadelphia, the city, should be championing this. This, you know, like the arts survived. The arts are a tourist commodity in these cities, man.
Right.
Criminal. Absolute criminal. And they label you guys as the criminals back in the day. They need to take a look in the mirror.
Well, I remember when I went to New York, I was going to school, man. And that art, man, was like, I looked up and seen guys on the train. You didn't see the guys' names on the trains. You didn't even see their names, man. You seen that. You didn't see the train. You seen their art. It was beautiful, man. It was so uplifting, man. It was so, I'll never forget it, man. It was very uplifting. That's what talent, you know, the guys getting the training. The train is all night long. So when they get dark, train go down, they go straight to work, you know. So what we did, when we gave road to, they took it to the next step because they had investors do it much bigger.
Yeah.
People like pour money in these guys, man. These guys is rapping. They was buying them a jewelry, putting one of their bags on television. You know, Lucas the type of way, dresses the type of way. And Phil loves to dress uptown. And everything changed. He was overlooked, you know, but it's the origin to everything.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And I tell the truth. Let the truth be told.
Truth has to be coming out. And it has to come out like this. I think it's a crying shame that me over here in London, we're talking about this now. And there ain't a platform in fucking Philly that allows, or at least some sort of whisper that there's a documentary that's
going on. Well, a lot of these guys, man, like I just turned 67. A lot of us, man, is like up there at age and settled down and they're falling back, you know. I still keep it popping, you know, like, you know.
Yeah, you do. You keep it popping.
This is my life. This is what I live, you know. In fact, I'm currently putting together a book, a desktop art picture book. I'm trying to get different artists to be part of this project with me. Send me their artwork. I need their photograph. I need their bio. I need their email address. I can be reached at cornbread1, the number, cornbread1philly@gmail.com.
There you go.
Small case letters.
We're going to get this out there so people can, that contribution to this book, it comes.
Small case letters. cornbread1philly@gmail.com.
And you're quick as well, man. Like, you know, we've been talking back and forth for a week or two. You're responsive. You are like, you don't muck about. You're quick. So anybody that's hitting you up, you'll get a response and you'll get the feedback. Right.
I want artists to send me their work, their bio, their email address, their photograph. I want to put them in a book. I want to showcase artists where the buyer, if anybody interested in buying your work, can contact you and not me. Mm. You're at first thing when you on top of your work is your email address, they contact you. You get 100% exposure, 100% credit, and everything is yours. I get nothing. Mm. So my book, if you're working it, and we will probably do this once a year. I would like to include different segments of our culture that includes B-boys, photographs of B-boys.
Just from the day, man. Undocumented stuff.
Spoken word poetry, rapping. There's a friend of mine whose daughter just got a modeling agency. A lot of urban feral fashion. I like to, feature a lot of art, dancing.
Cornbread, you sound like a gentleman that is fully immersed in the culture. How often do you sit there and does it blow your mind, you know, that you are one of the main beginnings of this scene and look how far it's come? Does it blow your mind? It must blow your mind.
What blows my mind is I would like to see the fruits of my labor. I like to sit in the audience and watch it. I don't want to be like, be worth more in depth than I am in life. A lot of money being made up because you checked out. No, I don't want that. I want to, watch the fruits of my labor, enjoy what's going to happen and let it, be for vulnerable where I can enjoy it. This book is just a start. People talk about wanting to do a stage play. Another person talking about doing another documentary. I have another documentary titled Cry the City. I can be reached at cornbread1philly@gmail.com.
Yeah.
I have t-shirts, I have hats, I have maps, I have street signs.
That's crazy. See, ahead of the game. Ahead of the game. Speaking to the converted here, this guy. It's crazy. It's once we're all allowed back out and outwardly mobile, we definitely need to connect when you get over to London, without question. Without question.
We need to stay with me. I got campuses too, man. I got campuses, large campuses, small campuses, medium sized campuses, street maps, stop signs, no parking signs. I got a whole bunch of bucket hats, baseball caps, hoodies. I got a whole bunch of stuff. So,
Where can they get them? What's the website?
Cornbread. Well, my website is really under construction now. You contact them by email. We can talk.
Okay, so it's all email, so we can make that happen like that. It's been a pleasure. It's been an absolute pleasure, Cornbread.
It's been my pleasure, brother. I want you to contact me, man. Send it for me, man. Come over there, man. Hang out with you guys, man. I would love to come over there and one of our shows, man, and collaborate with some brothers over there, man.
That would be crazy.
Call Tom Simpson. Call me when I collaborate with you. Just send for him, man, to come over here, man, and bring some work over here, man, and let's make it happen. I'm with that.
You hear that, people? Cornbread is in business. In business. Thank you so much for joining me, mate. I really appreciate
it. Thank you so much for having me, man. And I look forward to hearing from you again. You take care of yourself. And you be careful.
My brother. Killer Keller podcast. It was out of fashion. Legacy legendaries inside the place. Cornbread. My brother. All right, man. You stay lucky, people.
All right.
Take care, Cornbread.
All right. Take care.
Peace.
Peace.
Woo! That was crazy. That was so dope.